From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. We got a big hour coming your way. We have the CEO of Goya Foods here. He's Yuanaway. He's going to be here. Bob Yuanaway. He's going to be in studio. He's also up to blast Donald J. Trump and the spiritual war. I'm going to be taking your calls, 1-866-408-7669. I could not believe how much people wanted to talk after that debate. I should believe it. I mean, 67 million people watched, so I should not be that surprised. But the lines were just jammed yesterday. We had a lot of great guests. But today we have a little bit more room. You can also write me at briankilmeade.com. So we'll get to all that. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. The first question she was asked, are the American people better off today than they were 4 years ago? And she didn't definitively say yes. And the reason is, it's complicated.
And the answer is no. They are talking points and they are living points. And when it comes to the economy, it's the number one issue in America. The reality could doom the Democrats if the Republicans can get their messaging straight.
Number two.
Crime is down in this country, and the demonization of migrants is not consistent with our country's values.
When you hear a charge that illegal immigration and migrant crime is one of the greatest threats to the country today, you say what?
That it's false.
Yeah, that's because you don't live in New York City or Aurora, Colorado. Well, how about Springfield, Ohio? The politics of the border might be interesting, but the effects of 9 million illegals plus, let alone the gotaways, has rocked this big and small cities across America and can't be spun as Ohio's governor has now sent out the National Guard to bring order to Springfield overrun with Haitians.
Number one.
Her economic plans. What is an opportunity economy? What does that mean?
And she's saying she can fix the problems that her administration has caused, but I just don't know if I can afford to take that risk.
The aftermath. These are swing voters. The debate aftermath is something we're going to explore from every angle. Yes, Harris exceeded expectations in the debate, but did she win over those voters? We will discuss, along with speculation of yet another debate in October. I think the only way they debate if it's on Fox, I hope Fox gets it. But for Trump and for the Trump camp as well as the Harris camp, there's strong reasons not to. I mean, Harris is not going to do better than she did. And Trump will definitely do better, but there's just a little bit of risk there. Remember, as bad as Joe Biden did, I think there was only a 2 or 3 point switch. So, as you know, obviously Trump went way above where Biden did. I thought Harris exceeded expectations. But then when I watched it back, I don't know if you guys had a chance to do that. You see these clips and you watch some of it back. And the Harris camp is so pleased by it, they actually put the whole debate on their site. So congratulations. Something's on their website besides donate now. But if you watch it back, you realize, you know, she had poise and she was enjoyed herself, was nervous in the beginning. And Donald Trump got a lot of these just killer questions on topics that aren't in the top 10 for America. Obamacare, really? The Congressional Black Caucus question, fantastic. 2020 election, we really got to focus on that. This is 2024, and we have huge issues with the economy, immigration, and inflation. We have huge challenges overseas. That's what ABC decided to do in their back half. But then when you look at it and you say, what did the American people learn from their opportunity to see 90 minutes of Kamala Harris, what did they learn? They don't know. They know she switched positions by the questions she was asked. But do they know why? Not by the answers she gave. And she was able to get under the skin and aggravate Donald Trump, not rattled. So, I don't know. At this point, I mean, are we looking at a UFC fight? Are we looking at a debate champ? Or are we looking at somebody to get our country in a direction we're more comfortable with? And I was shocked as I flipped around to CNN and MSNBC and back to us. I got a lot of this, cut to.
Didn't get answers to fundamental questions that we need to know as voters. Her economic plans. What is an opportunity economy? What does that mean?
Race baiting and fear mongering was a big part of her tactic tonight. I think he was gaslit during the entire debate, and that was probably why he was so defensive. Absolutely. And even when he brought up the topic of race, he brought that up because she's pandering.
So these just independent voters. I didn't edit them selectively. This is what was on other channels. And here's what's on our channel, too. We mix in some of them. Cut three.
I think it's important to remember that we are voting for the leader of our country and not who we like the most or who we want in our wedding party, but who is actually going to make our country better. And we're in an incredibly unique situation where we've had both of the candidates in office before, and we've gotten to see what they would do. And when facts come to facts, my life was better when Trump was in office. The economy was higher, inflation was lower, things were better overall. And now with Kamala's administration, things haven't been so fantastic. And she's saying she can fix the problems that her administration has caused, but I just don't know if I can afford to take that risk.
And so here's what I want to get across. And I needed this mental adjustment, too. Is that, you know, I'm watching, this is a good point, this is a bad point, this was a good counterpoint, this was not a good counterpoint. I'm surprised he didn't say it. And when we walked away, if you just say to yourself, I want leaders in my country, locally and nationally, federally, to be able to get us going in the right direction and get out of my way, to so to speak, so I have a shot at being more successful. Just let's look, compare the two administrations. We couldn't do this in the past. Now we can. Inflation's up 19% from where it was 4 years ago. The price of groceries up 21.8% from 4 years ago. The change in gas prices up 37% from 4 years ago. Credit card debt, this really struck me, 48%. So that means one out of every two people have more credit card debt today than they had yesterday, 4 years ago. The economy versus Trump. Mortgage rates were 2.7 during Trump's era. Now, 7.7, you might say, well, that's the Fed's decision. The Fed's decision is responding to the economy. Personal savings, up 385% during Trump, down 73% during Harris and Biden. Credit card delinquency, it means I give up, I can't do it. It was 11%. Now it's plus 50, but it was minus 11%. Now it's plus 50%. Weekly wages up 8.2%. Weekly wages under Harris down 3.9%. So, those are numbers, but it shows a trend and shows most people listening to me right now have had a negative impact towards their economic situation during the last 4 years. So then you say, well, whose fault is that? We're coming out of the pandemic. Well, there are certain things about supply chains in other countries that we get things from that are going to be slower. We found out that too much of our manufacturing is with other countries like China. Understood? But then when you go ahead and pass the Inflation Reduction Act and the rescue package, two titanic spending packages towards an agenda, a rescue that was already put in motion by Congress as late as December of 2020, you know, this is inflicted. And it was made so much worse. Would inflation have gone up with the spending we had to put into the system as we told America to go home? Yeah. But would it have gone up that much if I didn't add $4 trillion to it? And no Republicans were voting for that. Then you add in the infrastructure deal with about a handful of Republicans, and you've got titanic spending. And then suddenly you have 9% inflation. Now it's going up 2 to 3%. But it never came down from the 9. It's just only going up 2 and 3%. So the threshold is still exceedingly high. So do you understand? When the American people, when we get these polls back from reputable companies, I don't think it's going to be the big surge for Harris and the big body blow to Trump. Because of what I just told you, those people are not looking to see who wants the debate to decide, I think, who to vote for. Because it's a whole philosophy of people that you want in power. And then you say, well, she sounds moderate, but what about anything she's done is moderate? And has she effectively explained her change in position? Because I'm all for change. You know, some of it you can't move and you're embarrassed. You know, Trump couldn't finish the wall. I'll tell you exactly what happened. $1.8 billion over the course of 2 years. And then suddenly he got so impatient, because you need about $20 billion. He got so impatient, he repurposed defense funds. You want to blame him for that? I don't know. It was a Republican House for 2 years. Then they flipped to Democrat. They just decided to spend the whole time trying to impeach him. So you could say, I wanted to finish the wall. He didn't. He got 400 miles or whatever it was, but he wants to finish it. Now everybody wants him to finish well. Nobody, you don't hear anybody saying we're not building that wall anymore, right? So Frank Luntz weighed in, and he was on with Piers Morgan yesterday. Cut eight.
This is not the worst debate performance I've seen in my career, but it's very close to it. The conversations about people eating dogs and cats, calling the leader of Hungary one of the greatest world leaders, repeatedly missing the opportunity to focus on inflation and affordability. It was a pretty negative performance, pretty pessimistic, cynical, contemptuous. And I think that this will cost him. Yes, I'm trying to decide if I want to go on record. And the answer is yes. I think that that he loses because of this debate performance.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see if Frank Luntz is now on the record saying that, because we have 55 days left to go. 55 days left to go with all those facts right there. And then we're seeing now Joe Biden again wallowing and withering with Harris. Okay, say Harris. She's your number two. She's in the room on every big decision. You're in the room now. Now they're deciding 2.5 years into a war in Ukraine that was preventable in many ways. I blame Putin entirely, but preventable. There's no Afghanistan withdrawal, that embarrassment. There's no Ukraine invasion. He's deciding whether to lift restrictions on the weapons we gave a country that was invaded. It's a ridiculous decision. Of course, if you decide to give them TACMs, you decide to give them HIMARS, you decide to give them drones, you should be able to let them use them to win a war. Joe Biden's never been in war. He got 6 deferments to stay out of war, and he should not pretend he knows war. The only thing he has is contempt for the military. So with the cats and dogs decision was very interesting for the president to come out and say, you know, they're eating their pets over in these Haitian immigrants are eating the pets over in Springfield. I'm pretty sure that's happening. I'm watching some video online. I could wait for it to verify, but let's just leave that out of it. You know what has happened? A city has been overturned by an influx of illegal immigrants. You know what's happened in Aurora? Gangs have taken over huge apartment buildings, and now they got to go through mass arrests over in Colorado. Denver's been transformed to the negative. The state is now a sanctuary state. The governor was denying that there was a problem, said it was a mirage, a facsimile of your imagination, right-wing media. Now this week, they're in there with special forces, essentially, gutting out this terrible gang, and they arrested 12 people. What kind of mirage is that? That's the reality. So you got a debate performance where you're saying eating cat and dogs. But then if you look, what is the Springfield story? Let me, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, let me find out. What was Trump talking about? You see how bad things got? And you see it's the illegal immigrants and the special exemption story for Cuba, Venezuela, as well as Haiti. And then you realize this is their policy that did it to this community. And if I'm Bernie Moreno, I'm livid in Springfield. I want to beat Sherrod Brown. That's what you get when you have a Democrat and a Republican state allowing these permissive policies. And Governor DeWine, to me, he's a moderate governor that I think handled the Palestine situation terrible. And I think this, he's very late to the party. He is now sending in the National Guard. So I think there's the facts and there's the perception and there's what I thought was a debate performance that wasn't great for Trump, made a lot worse by the moderators. You heard Mark Penn yesterday. He called it the worst moderated debate he has seen in his lifetime. I think he's about 65 and used to work with Clinton, both Hillary and Bill. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back with your calls in just a moment. 1-866-408-7669.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We asked in the poll pretty much, what do you think Kamala Harris's views are? And they guessed more correctly than you would think. They think she is more for open borders and policies, and that she is more to the left of Biden. So I think some of this stuff is really sinking in, and it's raising questions. And that's why you have a bunch of undecided voters who are not moving that quickly till they hear more about what she stands for, and particularly more about the economy, because most undecided voters, they're not voting on immigration or abortion. They're really deciding on the economy and who they think will be a better president who will make things better for their own lives.
And what you do is you want somebody that's going to set the ground to have people with money who are successful invest. They hire people, it grows the economy. They mentor people, they grow their own businesses. That's the most of conservatives' philosophy. If you keep on vilifying billionaires and millionaires, most of which, by the way, have been voting for people like Harris and Biden, what you do is they just say, no reason to invest right now. I'll do the best I can to put my money into something that's going to pay me the least taxes possible, which all rich people do. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you say unrealized capital gains, when you say you're going to tax people at double the estate tax, that to me doesn't really give jet fuel to the economy. Brian, listen, WHIO. Hey, Brian, over in Canton, Ohio. WHLO, my problem.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's on your mind?
Well, I think it hit real close to home with the Springfield, Ohio story, what you said about Governor DeWine. He's not a strong Republican for this to take this long, but that's happening all over Ohio. It's happening right here. I'm about 2 hours away in Madison, Canton, Ohio area.
What are you seeing there, Brian? What are you seeing in Canton in terms of immigration and crime?
I have a friend who works in the school system, and there's a lot of Guatemalans, a lot of other nationalities have been here for years where they overrun certain areas, and they've got to take care of them in the schools. She goes, this is pulling away from our own children in the schools.
I'm getting that on Long Island.
And it doesn't get reported.
I'm getting that on Long Island. I'm getting that on Long Island. They have special services. Only so much public school money for special services. If you have a speech impediment or your English is a second language, at least if you're an American, you're here, you deserve this. You're paying taxes. But if you're an illegal, you get the same services. And these kids, a lot of them don't have one word of English. So how am I supposed to split off and handle my newest student, who I don't even know if he has parents here, as opposed to the other students who are paying taxes here? And this is why I don't think the debate matters as much as I originally thought, because he focused on cats and dogs instead of what's really going on in Springfield, regardless of the pets. People miss the story. But if you're living the story, you don't need Trump to correctly characterize it. They know it, and you know he gets it. Alex, you're in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I think Trump won the debate. I know Kamala Harris, you know, did get some good ones in, and Trump underperformed. But I do think that this election comes down to the undecided RFK voters, because they're the only ones that haven't decided yet who they're going to vote for, some of them. And they only care about policy. They don't care about the drama. So Democratic voters are excited, oh, she won. But the RFK voters, they don't feel like she really addressed the issues. And I also think, Brian, that she prepared for this debate way before she became the candidate, because she knew there was a chance she was going to be the candidate. And here's how I know that, because she did an interview that she prepared for 39 days since she became a candidate, and she sucked away at that interview. Whereas with this debate, her performance was way better than was expected. So I think she was possibly preparing for months, or maybe even for a year now, for this debate.
I don't think so. I mean, she's a smart person. She's used to being a lawyer. They're used to reading tons of stuff. I know that for a fact. And I think if you give her 5 days, 8 hours a day, I prepare her anything. And, you know, they were doing act outs. All you have to do is look at Trump's past performances, last seven debates, let alone his other debate, and you know how he gets up on his opponent. So to me, she just prepared well, and Trump, I don't think, prepared enough.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Her policy proposals would be a disaster for this country. I think the president was spot on when he described her plan as run, spot, run. I think that was the extent of what the Kamala Harris has. She is using what Biden has used for the last 3.5 years, and it has been a disaster for this economy. And we know that's the number one issue with the American people. And they know that President Trump created the strongest economy that this nation has ever seen during his first presidency. And so that's why the American people trust President Trump when it comes to who's going to make the economy better. And are they going to be better in 4 years? Yes, they will under a Trump administration. No, they won't under a Harris administration.
Andrew, that is Congressman Andrew Clyde over in Georgia. Obviously, he feels that way, but he also has the results and the numbers I gave you to open up the show to back up. The economy was better under Trump, even with the pandemic overall. Bob, we're very privileged to have with us the author of a brand new book called Blast, Donald J. Trump and the Spiritual War. It comes out next week. And Bob Unanaway joins us now, the CEO of Goya Foods, right in studio. Bob, welcome. Your thoughts about your takeaway from what we know of the Harris proposals as opposed to what Trump wants to do.
Well, you know, we didn't really hear any proposals. She's been in there 3.5 years and is doing nuts. And what they did do is they grew the biggest two industries in the world.
Which are?
Drugs and trafficking. That has exploded. Last year, Tara Lee Rodas testified on April 26, 2023, that the U.S. is a middleman in the trafficking of children and people. Tara Lee Rodas testified before Congress, April 26, 2023. There were 85,000 children missing at the time. Now there's 325,000 children missing. It's just the biggest industry, hundreds of billions of dollars in drugs and in trafficking, which are people coming across our border. You know, I've been to Central America. I've been with Bukele, who has incarcerated 15,000 MS-13.
President of El Salvador?
Yes, sir. And, you know, the MS-13 and Tren de Aragua are already in this country from people from 180 countries coming in to not to help, not to work, not for the land of opportunity, but to take advantage of us and basically take this country over. We have to work more than half a day so that other people don't have to work. The average Social Security check at the end of the year, I'm 70 years old, is $1,200. But the illegals are getting as much as over $3,800 a month. They shot down recently a program in California to give illegals $150,000 tax-free loans. When the biggest...
To buy a house.
To buy a house. And inflation today, the biggest number right now is housing. We can't afford, as Americans, housing. And yet to be offered $150,000 tax-free to someone that doesn't even work in this country is coming to do us harm.
What I find amazing is, and I'm encouraged, is that in 2016, when you bring up these numbers, they would say, you guys don't have a heart. These people are coming here for a better life. And they try to give that story, give me your huddled masses, that's written on the Statue of Liberty. Now in 2024, no one's really embracing the fact that they're a sanctuary city. No one's saying, oh, we have a big heart. 67,000 at least in New York City here, that have come through our border illegally that we're now feeding, providing shelter. They didn't like our food. I'm not sure if we were going to Goya products. So we said, what if we just give you money? So we gave them debit cards to shop on their own. And now that pilot program is now the in-kind program.
Well, all this has an effect. You know, when I graduated college, I was in New Jersey, and the tax rate was 2.5%. And now it's 9% there. I live in Texas. I hear you're going out of Long Island. But, you know, our taxes go up and up and up because we have to pay for other people not to work. The big cities in this country are being destroyed. All the handouts. You know, when I got out of college, I made $4 an hour. That's $8,000 a year. But I paid taxes. I had skin in the game. You know, we're now people, more than half of this country either doesn't work or is receiving, doesn't pay taxes.
Only 61% of the workforce, according to right now, is working. Right. Doesn't count the people that are retired, legitimately retired there. But if you ask me, too, I was watching the Social Security hearings yesterday. That's how rich my life is. But we got to raise the retirement age, and we got to have people pay more into it. For example, when you get to a certain threshold, you hit your cap in 6 months. You can pay a little bit more. Also, if you don't want Social Security, you should be able to give it back. Right now, you have guys like Ken Langone, who says, I'm a multi-billionaire. He says, I don't want my Social Security. I can't stop the checks. So I think you could have people refuse to take it. That would, the little things like that would help, wouldn't it?
That would help. I've worked for close to 50 years.
It's your money. put into it.
And I'll probably get close to 3,000 a month or something like that. I don't need it. You know, I didn't start out with money, but I'm okay now. But the thing is, the hardworking Americans that work like me 40, 50 years, at the end of the day, they're receiving next to nothing. And by the way, there won't be that money available because we are giving it to people coming into this country that don't have to work. We're working so that other people don't work. They talked about price gouging the other day. The grocery stores make 1.4% roughly. They have issues with safety. They got to hire security. They got to work their butts off to just come make 1%.
But Bob, you know what they try to do is they try to make successful people the bad guys. And you're the problem. You're not paying what you should be paying. So we're going to go after the gougers, the billionaires who aren't paying their taxes, because it's easy to vilify people that allegedly have things that you don't have. And I just think you talk about divisive statements, price gouging, supermarket owners, the great risk you take, and then we're going to give price fixes. That's not the country. Our whole country would go down if we had that.
It's communism. We're moving away from God. You know, we're not a land of opportunity anymore. We're the land of handouts, and we're spreading money all over the world. We have to align with our allies in this hemisphere. And like Europe has done with the European Union, and strengthen our economy.
So you look at the Central and South American allies in our area, in our hemisphere, and give them special trade status like we gave you the United States and Canada?
Well, there already exists what's called GSP, Generalized System of Preference. So, you know, not all countries pay tariffs, and it's by certain conditions. But we can absolutely give preference to our friends versus our enemies.
Right. So you mentioned your support of Trump, and that's what your book's about. What do you see in President Trump that was just resonating with you?
Well, you know, this goes back to July 9th, 2020. I was appointed a commissioner on the White House Commission of Hispanic Prosperity, but we were in the middle of COVID, and nobody was working. We were working because we're an essential business, but work is essential. The fact that, you know, we had to get up every day and we could get up every day was incredible for me. You know, I was almost all day at the office and at the factory. Thank goodness In-N-Out Burger was open until 1 a.m. because I could go get something to eat. And I got COVID. I didn't take the vaccine. And my friend Dr. Carson says I have the T-cell memory. But that was another farce, if you ask me, because the pharmaceuticals were taking advantage of us to make money. But so we as a country were out of food. The food banks were empty. And I wanted to offer to this country, as I had with the Obamas, I was with the Let's Move campaign and My Plate with Michelle and Barack back in the day. But I wanted to reach out to President Trump for two reasons: to offer a couple million pounds of food to a country that was without it, and also to have him get closer to the Latino community, because we're the second largest Latino Hispanic community in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be the future. We'll be the biggest group by 2050, or maybe with the next caravan. But so, you know, I wanted to reach out, and we didn't donate 2 million pounds. We donated 5 million pounds. And while I'm sitting there, they had me speak, which was amazing. I hadn't met the president, and the Holy Spirit put the word blessed on my lips. I said, we're blessed. And that ignited, I believe, the cancel culture as a spiritual war. For me to have the audacity to say bless and Donald Trump in the same sentence. But since then, I see that I believe that God has put his hand on President Trump, and that he's been called to lead our country closer to God in prosperity, in safety, in our stature around the world, which are all the things that he's done already. And we'll do it again. I mean, to have the Holy Spirit, I believe, turn the president's head on July 13th at 6:11 in the afternoon, where it says, St. Paul to Ephesians, put on the armor of God. And he turned his head and the president was saved. He's been called, in my opinion, to lead our country to greatness, to prosperity, back to where we were. I mean, I was born in 1954. This is an entirely different country. We're not working. You know, we're moving away from God. And this is what the book is about, is that. So it wasn't a support of President Trump, right, per se. I've gotten to know him and actually love the guy. But I think he's going to make America. He takes hits every day. From everybody, and yet he keeps going because, like he says, they're not after him; they're after us.
Well,
he's just in the way.
His numbers with the Hispanic community is through the roof. Compared to other Republicans, I mean, suppose he could have a shot at winning the Hispanic vote, which George W. Bush did one time. But for the most part, there was a theory out there that every Hispanic that comes across our border is a Democratic vote, and that is why there's a rush to legalize these illegal immigrants here in our country. But that whole premise is being challenged now, isn't it?
Yes. It's not going to – if we get 50% of the Hispanic vote, he's in. Now, in 2016, it was in the 20s. In 2020, it was in the 30s. And now it's mid to high 40s, even 50. The Hispanics are the number one victims of trafficking, 75% women, 25% children. But we're also the working class. And so we're getting hit with this inflation, this man-made and women-made inflation, by a war on fossil fuel, by the New Deal, by all the giveaways, and by a stature around the world where we're losing, you know, people are going into countries which are breadbaskets. And we see our food prices and the cost of gasoline, housing, everything is going through the roof.
Right. So I know you want him to win. But from what you know, do you think he's going to win?
You know, in my book, I say he's been chosen. He's going to win. I say he's going to win. And I think people are seeing Hispanics, the black community, all the minorities and everybody that he's done it before. He'll do it again. He's courageous in taking it, all these hits. I wouldn't, if I had the money he has, or I, like you said, he could retire on the
beach.
Doesn't
need to do it. Yeah,
he doesn't need to do it.
He's one of the few presidents who's actually lost money in the presidency and after. If you look at the charts, everybody else is as their net wealth has gone through the roof. I want you to hear something about the assassination you just brought up. I want you to hear what Melania Trump said, and now that she has a book coming out, not to rival yours, but she has a book coming out the first week in October about the assassination attempt. Cut 40.
The attempt to end my husband's life was a horrible, distressing experience. Now, the silence around it feels heavy. I can't help but wonder, why didn't law enforcement officials arrest the shooter before the speech? There is definitely more to this story, and we need to uncover the truth.
Is that your sense? I know you have a lot on your plate as the CEO of Goya. You're going around, you have a million things going on. Do you wonder why we haven't gotten more answers about who this shooter is?
Well, you know, there were Congress people who wanted to take away his detail, period. So, I mean, if you look at it, I think the most logical person would say this was a conspiracy. There's more people involved. I mean, since the day he got into office in 2016, he's had everyone against the FBI, all the three-letter agencies.
The FBI.
FBI, DOJ, they've all been against him. And it's scary. But something like this, to have it so lax, it's not an accident. This, you're talking about we're the Secret Service, the FBI, the CIA. We're the top intelligence in the world, and we can't figure out that a guy is sitting on a park bench with a scope and all this stuff, and nobody did anything. It was let happen. Let it happen.
Bob Unanaway, thanks so much. Pick up his book, pre-order his book. It's called Blessed, Donald J. Trump and the Spiritual War, and pick up anything Goya, because this is a great man who's done great things for this country. Bob, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. You're the best.
Thank you. Bye. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I have one-on-one discussions with people in the media will not necessarily connect with the voters. I want to see her connecting with voters, responding to their dreams and their aspirations, listening to their questions, and then helping them find solutions. Because, you know, if you go on these one-on-ones, sometimes you drill down into a question until there's a word that's uttered that can be used in a negative way. I just would like to see her out among the people interacting with them.
So do you know what he's saying? He's saying, I don't want to see Kamala Harris in a one-on-one situation because he could use words and use against him. That's called answers to questions that are either incomprehensible or erratic, incongruent, not productive towards selling something you don't believe. And most of the stuff, when they all are flip-flops, I'm not going to run through them again. I think most of you know them, 15 minimum. If you start doing that, and she has the wrong answers to why she's changing her positions, next thing you know, this will be chinks in the armor. So why take the risk? How about this? It's the most important job in the world, the most powerful position in the world. I owe it to the American people to find out who they're elected. By keeping people in bubble wrap, down in a basement, in a safe zone, in a safe house, you're not doing the candidate justice. You're not doing what every candidate has done from the beginning of time. Outside the beginning, when George Washington was essentially named, we have to get a chance to kick the tires through a primary process, through a nomination process, and then through a head-to-head. She's got none of that, and you still don't want her to do interviews. Joe in Long Island. Joe, what's on your mind? Real quick.
Brian, good morning. I disagree with a lot of the pundits. I think Trump did just fine. It was a draw. He made a lot of good points. He achieved a big objective. He wasn't vitriolic. He had to be careful. That would have been the headlines the next day. He went after a woman. He didn't do that. He made a lot of good points. He was 3-on-1, clearly. He could have said simple things. Lake and Riley could have went into more detail. She was very scripted. He could have said, hey, 81 million votes, and you'd knock the guy out in 3.5 years because you're doing a great job.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. I appreciate not only New York City, there's a lot going on here. Huge, the number one issue, number two issue maybe in the country, illegal immigration is everywhere. You can't even walk down 7th Avenue and you see this is not 7th Avenue full of tourists anymore. Kids are back in school. We are just bursting at the seams here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Mark Thiessen, get his review of the debates and where we go yesterday, where we go after yesterday. And also, we have Jason Chaffetz at the bottom of the hour. There might be another government shutdown. Some on the right, the same ones that ousted Kevin McCarthy, are looking to do the same thing with Johnson. Not necessarily kick him out, but ignore him and humiliate him by not funding the government. I think you got to find a way to do it. And I just think this holdout, this little dance we do, just seems to always make Republicans look bad. I'm not really sure. But we're back on the campaign trail. It looks like the campaign tracker has Harris holding a campaign rally in North Carolina, Trump delivering remarks in the economy in Tucson, Arizona, and Tim Walz who making remarks in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They'll be scintillating. His arms will be everywhere. And then Harris will have another rally in Greensboro, North Carolina. Doug Emhoff is doing some stuff, but I don't know who shows up for him. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. The first question she was asked, are the American people better off today than they were 4 years ago? And she didn't definitively say yes. And the reason is, it's complicated.
Right. Thank you for that. It's too complicated for someone like me. There are talking points and there are living points. And when it comes to the economy, it's the number one issue in America. The reality could doom the Dems. I'll explain.
Number two.
Crime is down in this country, and the demonization of migrants is not consistent with our country's values.
When you hear a charge that illegal immigration and migrant crime is one of the greatest threats to the country today, you say what?
That is false.
Okay. Now go out, walk the streets. Good luck with that. The biggest disaster that I can remember in my lifetime, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas. The politics of the border might be interesting, but the effects of 9 million illegals here have rocked big and small cities across America and can't be spun, especially when you look at Ohio and the governor sending out the National Guard to bring back order to Springfield overrun with Haitians.
Number one.
Per economic plans, what is an opportunity economy? What does that mean?
And she's saying she can fix the problems that her administration has caused, but I just don't know if I can afford to take that risk.
That's the key. The debate aftermath. Yes, Harris exceeded expectations, but did she win over voters? We will discuss along with speculation of yet another debate in October. Mark Thiessen joins us now, Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor, and he's also got another job with AEI. Mark, your thoughts 48 hours since the debate.
So the fundamental thought is the debate was not good for Trump. It was good for Harris, but I don't think it's changed the fundamentals of the election. So if you look at the New York Times Siena poll that just came out, this is a change election. 91% of voters say they want change, including 61% who want major change. And of the voters, 6 in 10 see Donald Trump as a candidate of change. Only 3 in 10 see Harris as a candidate of change. So in a change election, she's the candidate of the status quo. He's the candidate of change. That hasn't changed in the debate. Second thing that hasn't changed, Donald Trump owns the center. So that same New York Times Siena poll found 49% of Americans think Donald Trump is neither too far right nor too far left. But 47%, both pluralities in both cases, 47% think that she's too far left. So she, if Donald Trump can continue to campaign as the agent of change against her as the left-wing extremist who wants to continue the radical policies of the Biden administration and even make them worse, it's his election to lose. But he's got to do that. He's got to prosecute that case effectively, and he's got to focus on winning over the tragedy of the debate. It's not that he did himself any terrible damage. It was just a huge lost opportunity to persuade the small number of swing voters in a small number of swing states who don't like the direction of our country but are not sure they want to put Donald Trump in the Oval Office again. He didn't do anything in that debate to convince them to do so.
Do you think he knows that?
I don't know. I'm interviewing him next week, so we'll find out.
Right. So 67 million people watch. That's a lot of people. We don't know how long everyone stuck with it. Yeah, but now we're going to see what happens. She evidently has some interviews scheduled in small markets with some local people, and I think she has one larger interview. I want to see what they're going to specifically release on that. Overall, looking at the debate, James Clyburn says, "I've seen enough." Cut 9.
Have one-on-one discussions with people in the media will not necessarily connect with the voters. I want to see her connecting with voters, responding to their dreams and their aspirations, listening to their questions, and then helping them find solutions.
So he wants them to find solutions, but one-on-one interviews are unnecessary. Wow, he has a lot of faith in her, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, what she was able to do she's famously considered lazy. Her own aides, if you look at the New York Times, did a big profile saying how her own aides said that she didn't read her briefing books and all the rest of it. She clearly did read her briefing books before this debate. She clearly studied her lines. She had a strategy. She baited Trump. He took the bait. He didn't seem as prepared as she did. And so that's harder to do for an interview where it's much more interactive and you are the only target. It's not like question. You have 90 seconds to answer. Then you go to the next person and let them answer and go back and forth. You've got a good interviewer will press down the CNN interviewers. I'm sorry. The ABC interviewers. They asked her, well, what about all your flip flops? And she said, well, I'm going to address all of them. And then she gave a word salad about how she loves the middle class and never addressed any of them. And they just moved on. It's like a good interviewer will say, I'm sorry, Madam Vice President, you said you were for a federal ban on fracking And now you say you don't want to ban fracking. Mm-hmm. What changed? What do you like about fracking now that you didn't like before? What have you discovered? You were against the CNN found 50 examples of where you said a border wall was stupid, a vanity project, a medieval vanity project, a waste of money. And now you support a border wall. Why? What is the virtue of border walls that you discovered? These are kind of the drill downs that she wants to avoid because there's not a lot of depth there. She learns her lines.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly was able to deliver them. But if you press down, she's a mile wide and an inch thick, and she can't answer those questions because it's all political expediency.
We know about the fact checking of David Muir when he knows what sarcasm is, and he actually wanted to speak about 2020, and he also wanted to talk about the 2020 election. He wanted to talk about January 6th. He wanted to talk about a comment he made at a meeting in front of the black journalists. That is not in the top 10 of America's most interest in any poll that I have seen. They're all in single digits. I want you to hear some of the things that Kamala Harris was not checked on. Cut 7.
A detailed and dangerous plan called Project 2025 that the former president intends on implementing. Couples who pray and dream of having a family are being denied IVF treatments. If Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. And what did the president then at the time say? There were fine people on each side. On that day, 140 law enforcement officers were injured, and some died. Donald Trump, the candidate, has said in this election there will be a bloodbath. Right. If this and the outcome of this election is not to his liking.
So obviously the bloodbath comment was an economic reference used every day on Fox Business and CNBC. The 140 law enforcement, nobody condones January 6th, but they already had a year-long TV show co-hosted by Liz Cheney. No one's clamoring to get to the bottom of January 6th.
No, exactly. And also, you know, what she said about Charlottesville was a lie. It's just not true. It's been debunked, not again by Jake Tapper, not by me or by Trump. It's universally been debunked, and they didn't correct her on anything. And then, you know, she says that Trump wants to pass a federal abortion ban, and they ask him, would you veto it or would you sign it? And he says, well, it's never going to happen because there's not enough votes to do it, which is true. To either pass an abortion ban or to codify Roe, you need 60 votes in the Senate unless you get rid of the filibuster, which he wants to do. But Trump isn't going to do that. Republicans are going to do that. So it's not going to come to his desk. And so he says that. And they said, but you didn't answer the question. Which is it? They didn't do that to her on anything. It was the most. But again, it's true that they were biased, but they were biased. You know, remember Candy Crowley's debate moderating with Mitt Romney? They're biased against Mitt Romney. They were biased against George Bush. That's not an excuse. You need to be able to answer. So when they press you on January 6th, you say, you know what? On January 6th, the border was secure. On January 6th, the country, the world was at peace. On January 6th, inflation was low. You pivot to what you want to say. And that's what he kept taking the bait and addressing what she wanted to talk about, what the moderators wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. You have to pivot to what you want to talk about.
I understand. Mark, a couple of things that you mentioned when you talk about what's going to happen, and that is another debate. It looks like the Harris camp wants another debate. Trump says, on Fox, he says he's not against NBC. You think he should do it?
I think he should debate again. Absolutely. I mean, you know, so keep in mind, in 2020, his first debate was a disaster. And his second debate was fantastic. And Obama's first debate when he was running against Romney in 2012 was a disaster for him. And then his second debate was great. He needs to go to school on why he didn't do well in the first debate and do it again. Absolutely, he should go ahead and do it again. He can be a great debater. I've seen him do it. I think he was overconfident. I think he believed that she was stupid and would make a fool of herself the way Biden did. And I don't think he was prepared. And look, when I saw Matt Gaetz getting off the plane in Philadelphia, I should have known at that moment that there was a problem. He needs to get somebody like Rob Portman in there, who's prepared every presidential candidate in the last 20 years for their debates to coach him on the debate. You need to have lines ready. Every one of those baits, the bait that she laid out was obvious that it was going to happen. What are you going to say when she brings up January 6th? What are you going to say when she brings up an abortion ban? What are you going to say? How do you pivot and have those lines ready and just execute them? He can do that. I've seen him do it.
So a couple of things. When it comes to the economy and tariffs, I thought this soundbite was so interesting from Rick Santelli on CNBC, because people say, well, tariffs are going to up prices, going to increase inflation. He's trying to bring manufacturing back. And he's got to do it in a very direct way. Listen to Rick Santelli.
You know how I feel about tariffs? It's a bargaining chip. And many of the tariffs with China are still on. Once again, the moderators don't drill down on the two aspects right. of tariffs, but they do drill down on other areas that make no economic sense whatsoever.
But you don't think the tariffs raise prices? Just as a mathematical economic...
Listen, prices are going up no matter what, Andrew. Whether you do it on the tax side, whether you do it on the tariff side, our policies are silly. We can't be Santa Claus. All those programs aren't policies. They're promises that never get by Congress, and each one of them has a cost we can't afford.
So, I mean, this is interesting. When I find that on CNBC, when they're talking dollars and cents, they know there's got to be a restructuring.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Tariffs are generally, as an economic matter, are a terrible idea. Because they do raise prices. Businesses pass them on to consumers if they're paying more costs. However, they're a great negotiating tactic because they hurt the other country as well as us. And so he, for example, one of the ways that Trump got Mexico to crack down on the illegal migrants crossing its southern border is to threaten to impose tariffs on them. And that's also how he got the USMCA. He uses tariffs as a tool of negotiation to get things for our country. And the second thing is I believe in free and fair trade, but we also need to – it has to be balanced by the reality of the impacts it has on our country. There are a lot of workers who've lost their jobs whose jobs – you know, you can't sustain free trade if people in Lordstown, Ohio don't support it. And we also need it from a national security standpoint. We discovered during the pandemic that being dependent on China for all sorts of essential things is a really bad idea. So we need to bring home some of the manufacturing, even if it's not economically the best way to do it. It's not the cheapest way to do it. It's cheaper to make stuff in China. But if from our national security, if they want to make our T-shirts, make all the T-shirts and sneakers you want. But if it comes to our pharmaceuticals,
our weapon systems,
Our weapon systems, you know, are the components for our weapon systems for you know, there's a lot of stuff that is essential to our country that we need to.
See, I agree. I agree with you too, Mark.
Security.
And you're right. If we're in an economics class, but we need something that is going to allow manufacturing to come back and put Americans back to work that's gradually been leaving us for 25 years. So if you go in there and you say, and I'm a great CEO, I go, I can't rationalize making furniture in America because I can make it quicker there. They could do it cheaper and get it here, and I could still make it cheaper, and then I sell it for a profit. The furniture store is happy. The customer's happy. But you know who's not happy? There's no manufacturing, basically. You don't make anything here. So that's the way it was. Now, if you tell me that the furniture I am getting from Europe, by the time it gets here through the tariff system, is going to be more expensive, then now I have a rationale to start building it here. And maybe, of course, might be a little bit higher at first, but then more people will be working. It's a national security issue, depending on what it is. And I could see just trying to undo the damage, well-intended, would happen with free trade in our country since the 80s.
You're 100% right. Look, here's the way you look at it, okay? I remember when they were talking about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Yep. Partnership. A lot of the free traders said there's no net job loss for America, and that's true. But there was a net job loss in Lordstown, Ohio, and it was net job loss for manufacturing workers. There was a gain of high-tech jobs and other things like that for wealthier people. But this is a democracy. And if you want to sustain political support for trade and not go to pure protectionism, you have to soften the rough edges of the free trade. You can't be a pure free trader. You have to take into account people who are losing their jobs over this.
When we were in high school and the people setting our economy were not thinking of the worker. They were well-intended, but they weren't thinking of the manufacturing base. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much. I look forward to your interview with President Trump. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Never thought I would ask you a question like this. Is anyone with undocumented status in Ohio, is any legal citizen, resident of Ohio, eating dogs or cats illegally?
Well, Major, this is something that came up on the internet, and the internet can be quite crazy sometimes. And look, the mayor, Mayor Rue of Springfield, says no, there's no truth in that. They have no evidence of that at all. So I think we go with what the mayor says. He knows his city.
I'm not saying I would have said it during the debate, but I'm seeing some video online. You're probably all seeing it. There say some of these immigrants, these Haitians, eating pets. John in Lakeland, Florida. John, real quick, what's on your mind?
Yes, Brian, I thought I'd tell you how it is down here. I got a daughter and a wife, and my daughter just turned 16. She can't go anywhere. Like, she can't go to Walmart. She can't go to the mall. They run in herds of, like, 10 to 20, and they offer money for sex, and they follow them around.
You're saying, well, no, crime is down, John. Crime is down. That's
it's
what we hear.
It's not down here.
No, of course it's not down. And, you know, I saw some startling stats, too. That part of the reason why violent crime is down is because these 70 George Soros DAs are the ones knocking them down to misdemeanors. Therefore, they're not listed as felonies. So when you give people light sentences, you also give them lighter charges. That helps the stats, don't you think?
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They were worse than actually I've ever seen in any presidential debate, right? I mean, this all started when, I guess, Romney was interrupted. I mean, the whole kind of moderator downhill notion, you know, stopped when Romney was kind of interrupted by one of the moderators a number of debates ago. But this was, look, this was egregious by ABC. I think, though, it's a disservice to have moderators like this in terms of giving everyone a fair chance. And everyone was surprised that CNN last time, they observed the rules incredibly well, and they let the two candidates, you know, go after each other and correct each other, you know, which is the proper format for a debate.
That is Mark Penn. He said it was the worst moderated debate he's ever seen in his lifetime. Remember, Clinton pollster, Clinton consultant, for Bill twice and Hillary once. Now he's doing the Harris polls, and I'm sure he wants the Democrat to win, whoever that nominee is. But he's calling it like he sees it. Reports are he's driving Democrats crazy. So I had him on yesterday just to take his report, and he said, I can tell you, it was a better night for her, but he did not see much. He does not predict much change in the polls. We will find out soon. But he really took it at the moderators. What does Jason Chaffetz think? Fox News contributor, former House Oversight Committee chair. Jason, welcome back. Your thoughts about what Mark Penn just said?
I think Mark Penn's exactly right. America saw it. I think they can make their own judgment. It is not their job to go in and quote unquote fact check. It seemed like a setup when Muir actually says out loud, "Well, we called the city manager." Why would a guy at that level call a city manager unless he knew that that was coming up and that he was going to be it sounded like a setup to me. And I think they're going to put a spotlight now on an issue. They probably will backfire on them because whether or not there's, you know, ducks and geese and cats being eaten, the issue is there are thousands of people that have been thrust into that community, and that's the bigger issue. That is the bigger issue.
And right now, there is National Guard being called up by the governor of Ohio. By the way, Bernie Moreno wants to be the senator from Ohio. He's got to be there.
Right.
So now they're putting thousands of National Guard into this small town of Springfield in order to try to bring some order there. But it's not going to fix the schools right away, which are overrun. They're almost double the size with Haitians who came there, I guess, ostensibly for jobs. But there's no place for them taxing the tax system big time, and now they got to create some order. The thing is, I'm seeing some stuff online. I would never have brought it up. I would have just focused on New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, Aurora, Denver, what the bad border policy has done. I wouldn't have brought it up. But the president brought there eating up the pets, the dogs and cats, and it's farcical at the sound. And then I'm online, and I'm looking at some of this video, and I know it's social media, who knows. If this continues, this story could change pretty quick.
Well, that's why I say I think the Democrats are giggling when it happened, but they're going to regret the fact that
there's something there.
There are millions of people here, And when they come here, they need housing. They need food. They need shelter. They need their kids. They want them to get educated. And this is going to drive home the point that that Kamala Harris was the leader in bringing all these people into these towns and cities who don't, they want to live their own culture. You know, You come from Haiti and suddenly you're in Ohio or Wisconsin or Michigan. The weather's a little different. The food's a little different. I mean, the culture's just different. They brought him in by the millions. You know, one of the things I wish
came out of the immigration program of Cuba, Venezuela, and Haiti. They have special dispensations.
Hundreds of thousands of people that were floated. They didn't even have to cross the border. The government, us paid for flights to bring them into the United States of America. And there's video of Kamala Harris kind of giggling about it, talking about, of course we did this. And it's so fundamentally wrong to the core. I hope that continues to be a driving issue.
By the way, they took their total eye off the ball in Haiti. They created that catastrophe by looking the other way. They've always been a burden, been a stress. But you have people in Southern Command that could be handling that. Instead, they ignored it. It becomes a farce. Murder of the the president gets murdered. It's been chaos since. But why is that a big deal? I don't live in Haiti. Well, the answer to that is it comes to our doorstep. We're basically in charge of the hemisphere, like it or not, America. And when all hell breaks loose in Haiti, they're going to want out. Some good people don't want to be murdered horrifically by a bunch of these crazy gangs and these orphans. So it becomes our problem. Now we have former Navy SEALs going into Haiti, rescuing children. It becomes an American problem. So the other problem is the illegals here and the ones that kill. And now Republicans are being accused of bringing out these angel families who have lost loved ones to illegal immigrants for political purposes. Jim Jordan was asked about that. And then here he thought, why don't I just ask the people that are affected most? Like, for example, the mother of Jocelyn Nungery, Alexis Nungery, on Capitol Hill yesterday, cut 25.
They proceeded to tell me how my daughter was murdered. She was strangled to death. She had no clothing from the waist down. Her hands and her ankles were tied and thrown under the bridge of water like she was nothing but garbage. Because of the Biden-Harris administration open border policies catch and release, they were enrolled in the Alternatives to Detention program. This meant that they were released into the United States. It was not even a full 3 weeks later that they would take my daughter Jocelyn Nungere's life.
Does that sound like a political statement?
It's one of the saddest things. I saw clips of this hearing in Congress, and every member of Congress.
You know who didn't see it? Jerry Nadler. Yeah. He closed his eyes. They said he was sleeping during it.
Yeah, I've been on the Judiciary Committee. I've seen Jerry Nadler personally falling asleep during hearings. I don't doubt that that happened yet again. I wish every member was actually sitting in their seat listening to these stories. They are horrific, and they could have been avoided because keep in mind, Brian, the law is if you come into this country between the ports of entry, you are to be detained and deported. End of story. That is the law. But when they issue an executive order creating these exceptions and they do catch and release, there's a consequence to that.
Why do you think the numbers have gone down since he offered those executive orders?
Because we're about to be at an election and they purposely drove those numbers down. But you can't erase the millions, millions of people that are here illegally. You know, it's one of the issues.
9 million.
Yeah.
Minimum.
One of the issues is housing. And Kamala Harris has the gall to say, well, I want to give $25,000 to these people to help them with first time, buying their houses. Well, when you are short of 10 million homes in this country and you have 9 to 10 million people here illegally, guess what? It's going to drive up the cost of low rental properties and it's going to make it more expensive for everybody.
There's
a consequence.
Another victim family is Tammy Nobles. She was asked by Jim Jordan if she's being used by Republicans. Cut 26.
Ms. Nobles, Republicans on this committee or any of Republican staff exploit you in any way to come to today's hearing?
No. I am not being forced to be here. I am here because I want to be here and I want changes to be made and I'm fighting for here for my daughter. And I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm sure the other witnesses weren't even forced to be here either, and they want to because they love their children.
In fact, my understanding is our Republican staff helped you get answers to the murder of your daughter that you didn't get from anywhere else. Our staff helped get that information by going to DHS.
You have, yeah.
That's the reality of it. You're not going to take a victim of crime, somebody who's daughter or son was raped, murdered, and force them to come to Congress. You're going to invite them to tell their story. And the stories mm-hmm. are so numerous that the administration and the Democrats, everybody involved in this process, they have to listen to these stories. We got 75% of the crimes here in Midtown Manhattan are committed by people that are here illegally.
Yeah.
75%? I mean, there's a huge consequence.
Now we want
to
give them $4,000 just to leave the free shelters they're in. Where this is a pilot program. We're going to give 150 people $4,000 just to get out. Stop living in our tent. This is what New York has come down to, and a Democratic mayor can't get an answer from his Democratic president.
Yeah, you can't get a hotel room in this city for less than $500 a night because they're using all the hotels as migrant sheltering.
Do you think those
hotels, it's not even cold yet.
Do you think those hotels are giving discount rates? They are not. They're getting top dollar. Every room sold out.
That's right.
And they'll go clean it out when these illegal immigrants leave. Patty Morin, a mother of Rachel Morin, brutally raped and murdered. Cut 30.
I really want Rachel's life to make a difference. And I really want and hope that you take into consideration what we're saying, because we want to save lives. It's not about politics. It's not about if you're a Republican or if you're a Democrat. It's about being American, protecting our families. And the only way we're going to do that and have this really be a land of opportunity for both the American citizen and for the immigrant that wants to come in is to do it legally and to have people vetted before they come into our country. We should be protecting ourselves.
It's so sad. And she's absolutely right. There is a legal, lawful way to come into this country. We welcome more than a million people each year, but you get vetted, you go through a process, not just pour them in here illegally. And Kamala Harris laughs about this. She has been complicit in bringing them in, and she insists that these people are safer than the people that are Americans. And that is so offensive on every level, especially if you compare and contrast the people that are trying to do it legally and lawfully. And, oh, I don't know, maybe homeless veterans or veterans with PTSD. Do you see them getting these types of benefits? No.
No, I don't. But here's the thing. Democrats have tried and to a degree they've made some inroads by saying that Langford Murphy Sinema, so-called bipartisan border bill, would have helped this, and Republicans wanted it as a talking point, so they didn't pass it. And Donald Trump is the maestro behind it.
No. Look, Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the presidency for 2 years. They didn't do any of this. They didn't even need a Republican to get it done, and they didn't do it. They waited, and they waited, and it was not a good bill. It was still going to allow thousands of people on a daily basis to come to this country illegally. Why should anybody vote for that? That is absolutely fundamentally wrong. To say it was all Donald Trump for political reasons, no, I'm sorry. You've had the White House, Democrats,
right,
for a long time. For 16 years, you've had it 12 years. For the first 2 years of the Biden-Harris administration, it was all Democrats.
But was it a bad tactic for Republicans to say, I'm not funding Ukraine unless we do something on the border? They dispatch three senators to work out something on the border. They produce a document, and all of a sudden Democrats go, yeah, pass this or you own this problem. Was that a bad tactic?
To think
you're going to do comprehensive reform in 2 months with three people.
Yeah, with three people, not even letting other – I mean, I've talked to a number of senators. These are friends
Senator
of mine.
Langford's
These are buddies
great guy.
Of mine. Yeah, good guy, tried hard. He may be supportive of it, but that's not the way the place works. You got to go build a coalition that never got there.
Right.
So – it is totally disingenuous to say that.
Then you have to be able to offer amendments. So we're just going to put it to a vote.
Yeah.
So by the time you got a chance to look at this, and if it got past the Senate, then it's got to get past the House.
They brought it up a second time. It got even less votes. And so, no, if it didn't pass, whose fault is that? That's the president's fault. That's a lot of people's who just didn't get it done. It wouldn't have solved the problem. I would argue it would have made the problem worse.
And because a lot of stuff would have been ingrained and unmovable. And it would have allowed 2,500 before a total shutdown of the border. Who's got the counter? Is it in Texas, New Mexico? Is it in California, or is it in
what are you
gonna Arizona?
Ring a cowbell and say,
yeah.
"Oh, enough illegal people coming in. Why should we even have one coming?"
And by
in
the
illegally?
Way, and then you got to have the manpower to actually shut it down.
Yeah.
And then number two, no provision for unaccompanied minors. They still get to stay.
We have hundreds of thousands of unaccompanied minors. These are like 12-year-olds. No, we have no idea where they are.
And then on top of that, it would have put into billions of dollars for these NGOs, which I think are taking the money, providing the basic needs of the new these new illegal immigrants, and then they're the safe houses, and then they put them into the school system. So the government can't do it, but the NGOs can do it, including Catholic Charities.
They just gave them another $380 million, and I'm telling you, long term, we will look back and look at the scams and the human trafficking. That is what's going to be happening.
Absolutely. Do you really think this is going to all the needs for toothpaste and towels?
Some people getting really rich.
Absolutely. Not us.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, I want to talk about what Jim Clyburn just said about the chances of Kamala Harris doing interviews. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I have one-on-one discussions with people in the media. Will not necessarily connect with the voters. I want to see her connecting with voters, responding to their dreams and their aspirations.
So do you believe James Clyburn, who, by the way, if you want to know somebody that can be productive in their 80s, James Clyburn is one of them. There's nothing about James Clyburn is different from when he was 60 or 50. Whatever you want to say, it's not that Joe Biden was old, just for the record. It's how he was thinking, performing. James Clyburn, whatever you think of him, he is on his game. You ever watch him walk, too? He looks like he's about 50 years old. And again, he put Kamala Harris there. He told Joe Biden, I'll make you the nominee. If you straighten out your organization, I'll make you the nominee. Pick a woman of color. He was down to like three people on the Democratic side. She got there. He was never the biggest fan. He's going to bat for her. But now he's telling her, don't do interviews. Overrated. You could get yourself in trouble. If I told Jason Chaffetz, Jason, don't do any interviews. I just want to see you get reelected. Would you be like, Brian, I could do interviews, right? Wasn't that an insult if I said that to you?
Yeah. Don't talk to anybody. You'll get yourself into trouble. Yeah, that would be offensive.
But a one-on-one interview could be trouble. Now, if you have the answers, you love it.
Yeah, it's so funny. Clyburn, to your point, though, is one of the most powerful people on the Democratic side of the aisle. And most people probably don't know him, but I'm just telling you, he is powerful behind the scenes.
Even though
he
moved himself from leadership.
Oh, yeah. He is a powerful, powerful person behind the scenes. He's pulling a lot of those strings. And you're right, Kamala Harris would never be there. Joe Biden would have never been there without James Clyburn.
Two senior Democrats have caused trouble for Harris by telling the truth. Bernie Sanders by saying, we're not worried about her. She's still a progressive. She's just trying to get elected. And then Clyburn like, no, I don't want to see her getting a one-on-one. She's going to get in trouble. Really? Thanks a lot, coach. Appreciate it. I have a lot of faith in you. Don't touch the ball. You're allowed to play. Don't want you to touch the ball. The ball's in the air. Run from the ball because you don't make a mistake if you don't touch the ball. I go, excuse me, I want to go in it. So untested through a primary process, unnominated, just anointed, and now one interview. See you in 50 days in November 5th. I think the American people demand more.
I hope so. I still think she's an unknown commodity. And the further we get from the debate, I think the less successful it was for her. She didn't put any meat on the bones. And I think about that very first question about, are you better off? Are people better off after 4 years of Biden and Harris? And she didn't even come close to answering that. Of course, no follow-up from the moderators, but she didn't even come. When she started talking about when I was a little girl, that has nothing to do with people's lives.
Pretty sure. I really don't care that she had a middle-class mom who was on a budget. Fascinating. My life feels better already. Well, should Trump do another debate?
I do think it would be best if he really goes back and looks at the tape and figures out that, hey, there were a lot of missed opportunities that we should be able to drive home.
Has to do it here. That would be the thing. You want to do it? We're doing it at Fox.
Yeah, that absolutely.
And if you don't want to do it, I'm not doing NBC. I gave you guys two networks. Yes. They would hate me. CNN and ABC. I'll do it at Fox. That's it.
It's got to be a balanced debate. And I know that Brett and Martha would.
Got it.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening all week long. We're closing out a very big week from 9/11, looking back to the debate, one and only, who knows, maybe a number two, to the aftermath to an election that's 55 days away. We'll have it all along with perspective. This hour, we're going to be joined by Riley Gaines. You know, the one issue that did not come up, and I would have loved to have seen some response from it. The one issue that did not come up was, hey, how do you feel about girls playing in men playing in girls sports, men boys playing in girls sports? How do you feel about that? Because there's a lot of girls out there who aren't for it. There's a lot of parents there that aren't for it. I'd love for her to back up with the extreme left, the one who give you the pronouns and tells you what pronouns when they email you. I want to see where America's at right now with the pronouns and the transgender things. With 67 million people watching, I would love to see Kamala Harris tell us how she really feels. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. The first question she was asked, are the American people better off today than they were 4 years ago? And she didn't definitively say yes. And the reason is, it's complicated.
Thank you. That's why I wish I was on MSNBC. They were talking points, and there are living points. When it comes to the economy, it's the number one issue in America. The reality, I don't know anything new about Kamala Harris today. You could forget about who won and who lost, in my view. We'll discuss it.
Number two.
Crime is down in this country, and the demonization of migrants is not consistent with our country's values.
When you hear a charge that illegal immigration and migrant crime is one of the greatest threats to the country today, you say what?
That is false.
And you're wrong, like you are about everything. The worst HHS secretary ever. That's Mayorkas. The politics of the border might be interesting, but the effects of 9 million illegals has rocked big and small cities across America. It cannot be spun as Ohio's governor sends in the National Guard to bring some order to a small town called Springfield, overrun by immigrants.
Number one.
Her economic plans. What is an opportunity economy? What does that mean?
And she's saying she can fix the problems that her administration has caused, but I just don't know if I can afford to take that risk.
Debate aftermath. Yes, Harris exceeded expectations, no doubt about it. But did she win over voters? Do we know more about her? We'll discuss it right now as we take a look at the aftermath of the debate. I think that most people agree that Donald Trump had many openings, a lot of Republicans still firmly in his corner. He's got 93% of Republicans. That's what I would have come back at, by the way, when they said, well, these people that used to work for you are against you. All right. When you fire someone, Madam Vice President, they're not usually happy with you. And for them to come out against me, they're aggressive, ego-driven people to get where they are in life. I don't expect them to be complimentary. If they are, that's nice. But I'm doing what's best for the country. And I'm looking at every stat, and I'm sure you know it better than most. 93% of all Republicans were in my corner. Dick Cheney and I never got along. Liz Cheney obviously didn't get along. Why anyone thinks she would be voting for me and make that news this week, that's really up to your editorial board. Don't know. But there were so many opportunities for the president just to go, look, I just want everyone at home to say, where were the interest rates when I was here? What was the gas prices when I was in the office? What was the border like when I was running things? What was the world like when I was in charge? Does anyone hear the Abraham Accords? It was bringing peace to the Middle East. We have anything but today. Do you know who armed Ukraine, allowed them to hold off Russia for 2.5 years? It was me. You know who didn't? My predecessor, Barack Obama. When they were taken, when Crimea was gone and the Donbass was occupied, we gave them blankets and MREs. When things had stabilized, I gave them weapons to fight should they get destabilized. I'm responsible. And I never would give an ally restrictions with weapons that I gave them. And I would never show a break between Israel and America. That's the difference. But we didn't hear any of that. And for people who are undecided, you wonder how they felt about that, because I thought she was well-rehearsed, ready to go. Julian Epstein, you served on the chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and staff director to the House Oversight Committee for the Democrats from 96 to 2001. Julian, welcome back. Your thoughts about the aftermath. I find it hard to believe anyone would get on and say Trump won. He believes that. I thought he missed a lot of opportunities. What do you think then? What did you think when it ended? And what do you think now?
I think ABC didn't do itself any favors. I think there were, it was obviously slanted towards Harris. And I think to the extent that there are complaints about partisan news bias, I think it underscored the case. I think that said, Trump can't, as somebody who wants to be president of the United States, be crying about the fact that the moderators were unfair. He knew they were going to be unfair when he agreed to the debate. That didn't stop him, as you just pointed out, shouldn't have stopped him from pointing out all of the things he needed to point out about the economy, about energy, about what happened in the Mideast, about what happened in Ukraine, the border. I mean, there were so many places for him to come back. I mean, the fact that, for example, when Harris said that it was that Biden-Harris team inherited the worst economy since the Great Depression, I mean, like, what is she talking about? GDP growth when Trump left was like 4.7%. Unemployment was dropping 2 or 3% percentages every quarter. It was one of the best economies that we had had. The immigration situation was under control. We had peace in the Middle East thanks to the Abraham Accords. There hadn't been any incursions in Ukraine. I think American deterrence was strong. Our energy production was much higher. The growth of production because of leases of oil and gas was much, much greater under Trump than it was under Biden. It's curved to a snail's pace. Of course, our production is increasing, but increases all the time with a growing population. That's not the question. And there was just so many things for him to sort of push back on. The whole Charlottesville trope, which has been debunked by Snopes and everyone else. There was just so many points where you would have expected if the moderators were being fair, they would have pushed back. But even if they weren't, it didn't stop Trump, who clearly was trolled. The strategy of Harris was to troll him. And when she said people leave his rallies, you could see how much that got under his skin.
Which is crazy.
And he just sort of.
Yeah, which is crazy.
But he should. He knows better.
I know.
And he should have not fallen for that. He shouldn't have fallen for all the insults. I mean, this whole thing about your former staff, your former chief of staff saying you're not fit to be president. Well, his easy response on that should have been, you had 90% turnover in your Senate office, and you had huge turnover when you were in your vice president's office. The Washington Post, the New York Times, Politico all wrote about what a catastrophe in management your offices were in the vice president's office, Senate, and even when you were prosecutor. So there were so many places for the president to come back on, and he didn't. And yeah, you can blame it on the moderators, but there was nothing that stopped him from doing any of that stuff.
Right. I mean, you could take the question in, say, well, yeah, I'll get to that, and then let me just tell you about what really matters and go that way. Just so you know, as we were having, under Trump, 4 million barrels of oil a day. Under Biden is 2.1. So if you wonder, and the result was $1.87 gas. And if you wonder why gas is about $2.90 to $3.10, depending on where you are, and it's going in the right direction, you could point it right to production. And you ask the people in oil and gas right now, if you want to get an LNG lease anywhere, you can't do it. We're on a pause. And they're trying to shut down drilling in the Gulf. That's to not tell the people of Pennsylvania, you're in an LNG pause right now. She says she wants to frack. Well, tell her to do it tomorrow. Tell her to call Joe Biden and say, start fracking because you paused. And what is she going to say to that? Number one, she might not even know.
Well, the White House, I mean, the reason you had the fracking provision in the Investment Reduction Act was because of Manchin. And the White House was trying to undermine the lease expansions that Manchin was trying to get for oil and gas. So it's hard for me to imagine that Harris could take credit for the signing of the passage of that bill. That was something the White House tried to undermine when Manchin was getting that passed. Again, the moderators didn't point that out, but neither did Trump. And the war on oil and gas really started in the first 2 years of the Biden administration. They relented by year three because of inflation. But that compounded with the antagonistic relation of Saudi Arabia. When Saudi stopped production, all of these things dramatically increased inflation because they increased the production costs of everything. When you increase fuel costs or decrease fuel production, you increase costs of everything you make and consume. So, look, I don't think Harris won. I think Trump lost the debate.
So let's talk about what it means. Let's talk about what it means, Julian.
Yeah.
So what does it mean if you really are an undecided, if you really are undecided and you're undecided or independent, do you have any more answers about what an economy, what an immigration plan, what a security plan, what our foreign policy is under Harris today?
My guess is the debate is not going to mean that much. And some of them do, as the debate in June did with Biden and Trump. My guess is it's not going to mean that much, and it's not going to move the numbers that much, because it was good theater. It was a good takedown of Harris on Trump, and she sort of scolded him. But to your point, she never really said what she's for. She never really articulated an economic plan that anybody can understand, or an immigration plan that sort of makes sense other than some vague reference to a legislation, or on any other issue. And I think the problem that Harris has right now is that the public disapproves of the Biden-Harris record by a factor of 2-1 or 3-1, depending on the issue. And Trump is still ahead on the most important issue, which is the economy. He's also ahead on inflation. He's also ahead on immigration, ahead on crime. I think Harris did not close the deal, or even come close to closing the deal, with the independents. And so I think you'll see the numbers move very, very little. We won't know for about, as Nate Silver is pointing out, we really won't know about this for about 10 days. My guess is it moved the numbers very little, and I think Trump is still ahead. I think what Harris has to do, and what I would urge her to do as a Democrat, is get out into unscripted environments and explain herself, explain her views on the economy, how she shifted on immigration, how she shifted on fracking. And I think she needs to do more of that, much, much more of that. As for debates, you know, if I were Trump, you know, I would probably insist on a debate that would have one moderator from CNN and one moderator from Fox. And then I would I would offer a second one that would be a public hall, a town hall.
Yeah, Julian, you know our channel pretty well. You know that if Martha and Brett did it, you would not know who they were voting for. And I think if you look at the other networks, when if they close it and the candidates, they would say the same thing. I mean, you watch Brett debates for Democrats and Republicans every day coming together. He has a podcast about that too. You wouldn't be able to tell. But what they would do is they'd have topics that were reflective of the interests of America. It wouldn't be a culture war. It wouldn't be a conservative war. It wouldn't be the Tea Party. It would be, okay, these are the issues that matter most. We're going to break it up this way. Be ready to see where they're going to go ahead of time. Fact check them in their common answers, because you have it in front of you. But for the most part, they would let the guys, they would let the two candidates go at it. So if I'm Trump, I'd say, yeah, I'll do it. Brett and Martha. And if you want to do another network, you can do it. But I'm not going to be there, because I gave you ABC, and 100% of the stories have been against me since you came in. 100% of the stories have been positive for you since you came in. 93% have been negative to me. I did it anyway. CNN, there's not one person on that channel outside a few panelists that have ever said anything positive about me. And I did it anyway.
Yeah.
So I would just say, you want that, we'll figure out a date in October. But the other thing is, as we head to the last few weeks, and when you look at what Trump should do, I think he goes back to that 2016 blue collar. I'm going to do 3 events a day, make them shorter, go off my plane, bring the people to the tarmac, get back on the plane, go to another city. How do you feel about that?
Well, he's winning the blue collar vote right now. He's winning the blue collar vote by a significant margin. He's overperforming Biden in the numbers right now, at least the numbers before the debate. So, I mean, look, I think both candidates have got to make their case. I like the fact that Trump is taking interviews. I don't like the fact that Harris is not taking interviews. I think there's a lot of explaining that needs to be done on the Democratic side. As you know, I'm a very centrist kind of guy. I'd like to see the Democratic Party move back to the center. But I also want to see some honesty in this process. And I don't think there has been enough examination, certainly on the Democratic side, as to how what the policies are and how they evolved. So, yeah, I'd like to see a lot more public events on both their parts. I'd like to see more unscripted media environments. I'd like to see town hall meetings that are also unscripted on both sides. And I'd love to see another debate. I don't know if Harris will agree to a Fox debate or not. I do agree that Brett and Martha are very fair. You know, perhaps you could have Brett and Martha on one side, somebody from CNN, like, you know, perhaps maybe Jake, who Trump complimented, on the other side, or John King, who I think can be fair, on CNN. And I'd love to see a town hall as well.
That would be cool. That would be cool. Julian, you're right. Get the people involved, you know.
Get the people involved.
But then you just got to make worry about being plants, people coming in.
Well, you can screen that. You can screen the plants.
Okay. Lastly, President Biden is thinking about, I know you're not a defense expert, but you understand the politics of it. You know how he's been conducting the war. He's considering lifting the restrictions on the weapons we gave them. If I talk to General Keeney, can't believe they were there to begin with. I talk to other people, they say, if you do that, you're going to start a nuclear war. I think the right thing to do is lift the restrictions, let Russia pay the price. Because this is, if it's a game of attrition, more innocent people are going to die. At least give them the chance to be successful. How do you feel?
Oh, I've followed this very closely. I mean, I have been critical of Biden for slow walking a lot of the weapons delivery to Ukraine. They did that the first 2 years. War is a game of who wins the escalation ladder. And if you cannot persuade Putin that the costs are going to be prohibitive if he continues the war, you will never make progress. So I think the idea of slow walking weapons to Ukraine was a mistake. In the same way, I think that publicly and privately undermining Israel has prolonged the conflict there and made a ceasefire much, much more difficult.
Gotcha. All right, Julian, always great to get your insight. It's going to be an exciting 50-plus days. Julian Epstein, thank you. We come back.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
You got it. We come back. Your calls, Riley Gaines. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The first question she was asked, are the American people better off today than they were 4 years ago? And she didn't definitively say yes. And the reason is, it's complicated, right? You just said it. You know, housing is still expensive. Insurance, car insurance, insuring your home, hugely expensive. So it is a complicated question for her to answer.
No way. I mean, you got to figure out positive. The way she did rehearsal, why wouldn't that question come up? So on some areas, I really feel proud of it. In other areas, we have a long way to go. And here's the problem, blah, 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 blah. And if I could do it again, I wouldn't do this. If I could do it this, I would do it this way. With Joe Biden, I disagreed with X, Y, and Z. But instead, I grew up a middle-class child who had somebody who worked in the house who was like a mother to me or whatever she said. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I thought, this is what it's going to be. I can ask you any question. You're just going to answer whatever you want. And what happens is I would have been forced to listen to her stump speech. It literally is the same speech over and over again. And when you do it, she was breaking into it throughout the 2 hours. So, and I did get, I'm not saying that ABC gave the questions because it would be the biggest scandal in history, almost like the game show scandal from the 1950s when they gave the contestants the answers. But it did seem that she knew exactly where everything was going because she didn't just answer the question. She knew the attack line. So that stuck out with me. What do you think? I really don't want to go over the debate too much. I just want to talk about what it means, where it goes from here, and would you do another? So I'll talk to Riley Gaines next, and then we'll take your calls after, and we'll find out if there's more to know. Don't forget, Peekskill, New York, History, Liberty, and Laughs, BrianKilmeade.com on stage.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So Riley Gaines has really done a fantastic job since graduating college. And who would think graduating with an Ivy League degree as a Division I swimmer would lead to success? I'm being sarcastic, just in case David Muir is out there. This is sarcasm. She's now she's on OutKick.com. She's a contributor for the network, host of Gaines for Girls podcast on OutKick. Now she's got a special coming out on Fox Nation. It's called Transfixed with Riley Gaines. Riley, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Brian. It is always a joy to talk to you.
I keep thinking, I'm sorry to keep repeating this, but I always think to myself, here you are en route to being a dentist, and now you're stuck being a media star with this Ivy League education, right? That was your thing. You were just going to you're going to finish up your NCAA career, graduate, and move on to that, correct?
That was the plan. I was in dental school, and I realize now that the quickest way to make God laugh in your face is to make plans for yourself, because he very clearly had different plans for me.
And now that you are in the middle of it, when you started taking on the ridiculous trend of putting men in women's sports because having gender dysphoria or issues, and we wish them the best, but you can't screw up women's sports because you have issues. You realize this is more than just handling it as a swimmer with my team in Division One. You realize it was a bigger deal. Do you remember when you realized it was a bigger deal than just your team?
Yeah. To your point, what we faced was absolutely absurd, and I recognized it. My teammates recognized it. Of course, my family, my coaches, my athletic director, everyone around me saw the harm in what was happening. We knew it was unfair. We knew the locker room aspect was wrong. We knew the silencing that we were facing from our universities was wrong. But it wasn't until that moment of being on the podium after tying this 6'4" man, yet I was denied the trophy. That was the moment when, for me, I was really just no longer willing to wait, because that's what I was doing. I was waiting for someone else to do something, because I thought someone would. I thought surely someone who was supposed to be protecting us would protect us. You know, a coach, an official, somebody. But no, I realized in that moment it was a naive thought. To wait for people to do the right thing unprovoked, we would be waiting for forever.
Right.
So that was pivotal for me. But then, of course, as time has continued, I've grown to understand that Leah Thomas, formerly Will Thomas, is not a one-off. This is happening every level, every division, every state, every sport. And then, of course, it's broader than just women's sports. We're seeing how the gender ideology movement is affecting parental rights. And we're seeing how it's affecting the safeguarding of children.
And by the way, I just got a news note to share, especially with my WABC audience. New York's police commissioner, one of the most prestigious positions for law enforcement in the country, Edward Caban, is expected to resign today. I mean, he's been encircled with scandal. His brother's been arrested. We know the mayor's being investigated. This city is an absolute mess. Nothing to do with gender dysphoria. But now back to what we're talking about. In particular, I think that you should be encouraged, because I think 2.5 years ago they wanted to paint you as being intolerant and people that supported you as being bullheaded, and we're in the world of pronouns, and they're still there. But I think there's a huge pushback now. I think society, there's a reason why we don't hear Kamala Harris asking to be her pronouns anymore, or other people trying to do this in order to get elected to a general audience. Do you feel as though America is waking up to the tolerance to this behavior is intolerant and unkind to females in America?
I absolutely do. Unfortunately, it takes pretty tragic situations, whether it's, again, what happened to me, what happened to detransitioners, you know, young children who were coerced and manipulated into transitioning. Whether it's, I mean, the Olympics, where you have males, I mean, winning Olympic gold medals in boxing, nonetheless, it takes these really horrible things for people to have their eyes open naturally and to be bold and saying, you know, a man cannot become a woman. And speaking to your point, I think it's really well put. As you said, Democrats, so it seems, they don't want to touch this issue anymore. They know it doesn't poll well for them, and they want to hide their voting records. I was really bummed watching the debate this week. I mean, I believe it was a deliberate omission surrounding the gender ideology movement. To be very, very clear, Kamala Harris thinks naked men belong in your daughter's locker room. She thinks males convicted of horrible, awful sexual crimes belong in women's prisons for simply saying they are women. She believes that your daughters aren't worthy of calling themselves champions, and men should take their hard-earned trophies. That's what her voting record shows.
And by the way, that was a fact check, but they were wrong. And essentially, on an ACLU forum, she was asked, do you believe taxpayer dollars should be used for illegal immigrants imprisoned, obviously for committing a crime, who want to change genders? The answer is yes, and we'll pay for it. And she said it twice. She did it twice, not only in the questionnaire, other places. That was not asked. I wonder why. You took everything else from the headlines, including a meeting in front of a congressional black journalist. You had to bring that up. You had to find out about Springfield and what you thought President Trump might say. You brought that up. But this was in the news the day before. Afghanistan really didn't come up nearly as much as I thought either, but I digress. So having said that, when the the issue came up in the Olympics with the boxers. They end up being Olympic gold medalists. Do you feel like that was a blow against you and your organization?
Definitely, in the sense of, you know, you just are left scratching your head. You're left scratching your head thinking, how in the world do we have leaders, in this case, leaders of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, President Thomas Bach, how in the world do we have leaders who have allowed this? But at the same time, while, again, it's incredibly, incredibly unfortunate, not only just unfortunate, it's unsafe is what it is, it does aid the movement as a whole in allowing people to see the absurdity of it. These were two athletes, and again, two men. Now, these are two athletes who were previously banned from world championships for failing the sex eligibility requirements, and the only requirement was having two X chromosomes, which these athletes did not possess, therefore indicating these athletes were males.
So so that's pretty clear. The other thing is you have a special coming up, and you're looking at more than just the one sport and one situation at a time. What was your approach to Transfixed?
Yeah, I mean, really, really heartbreaking stuff. We spent a little time touching on women's sports, you know, again, answering the question of how we got here, diving into that. But what we go through this series is understanding how female athletes aren't the only victims of this movement. Arguably, even more so are the children who have been coerced, who have been manipulated and lied to and deceived and told they are correct to believe that they are born in the wrong body. We get into the transing of minors. We talk to transitioners. We talk to detransitioners. We talk to families who have had their children taken from them, who they don't even know if their child is still alive anymore because the government has total ownership of their child. We talk to legal teams and lawyers and endocrinologists, and it's all-encompassing, but it'll leave you feeling frustrated, feeling heartbroken, but the goal, of course, is to mobilize you, to let you know this is happening. It's happening all around. Don't believe the lie that they tell you that this is, you know, this is just a solution in search of a problem, because, again, that's entirely not true.
So you have this an interview with Walt Heyer. I have a clip here. Do you want to tell us what we're about to listen to?
Yes. So Walt is a detransitioner. He's a male. Lived his life for many years as a woman, and late in his life decided, you know, I'm not a woman, I'm a man. He's been now on a mission to help others, other people who have transitioned, understanding their true identity, their true self, and who God made them to be. He finds his faith. It's really incredible stuff.
Here it is.
Autogynephilia is a sexual arousal disorder. It's a sexual fetish disorder. And I can say that some of the men that you see out there on the screens, not me, that are identifying as a female are actually dealing with autogynephilia or transvestic fetish disorders. They just don't want to come clean about the fact that they are not really transgender.
So that was a, man, that was an action-packed clip. So I didn't even know that was a disease or that was a phobia, whatever it is. So what did you accomplish in this for you? What did you learn?
I learned a whole lot, really. You know, I figured I was someone who, you know, being kind of immersed in this space the past 2 years, naively, I thought I knew it all. I was so wrong. I was so wrong in assuming that. Listening to the tactics, the emotional blackmail that these young children have been met with, learning about things like Walt Heyer was talking about, like autogynephilia, which again is the sexual arousal of as simply dressing as a woman. You know, he goes in depth about how many, he doesn't speak for everyone, of course, but how many, especially young boys who transition are really just opportunists. You know, they see the opportunity to get into a woman's locker room or you know, for a male inmate to get into a women's prison where now AIDS are running rampant, where women are being impregnated. California just passed a bill that would put contraceptives in all women's correctional facilities. Now ask yourself, why would they need birth control and contraceptives if it's only women in these prisons? And that's because there are men in there. And so I learned truly so much, which is why I'm so passionate about, you know, the general public being able to watch and to learn just like I did.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, with the governor of Minnesota, it's us. What is he known as?
Oh, the governor of Minnesota. Gosh, this guy. He has I was really bummed, too, to see Taylor Swift's endorsement of Kamala Harris, this ticket, of course, Tim Walz, and citing how he has been a leader in LGBTQ rights issues. What she means in saying that is he's been the leader in dismantling women's rights and, again, the safeguarding of children and, again, parental rights. That's what really Tim Walz of Minnesota has done.
I hear you. Because that's what he said. You have to tell the parents if you feel as though you're the wrong gender, and it works from there. Thanks so much, Riley. Go check this out on Fox Nation, right? Is it dropping today?
It's out. It's out and it's up.
Transfixed with Riley Gaines. Thanks, Riley. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. We'll get to your calls and find out if there's more to know in just a moment. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
We just hit something on the taxiway. Could you tell us what it was?
The whole tail of that CRJ's off. Yeah, we got the CRJ-900 with its tail off here off of Foxtrot 2.
One of the pilots involved in the Delta Airlines runway collision had no clue. He hit another plane. This audio you just heard, he said, quote, "We just hit something. You know what it is? The plane collision went down Tuesday in Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and video and photos from the aftermath shows exactly what air traffic control described there. Delta says the wing of an Airbus 350 hit the tail of a smaller Endeavor Air CRJ-900 while both planes were on the taxiway. It sounds like the pilots in the larger jet were caught totally off guard." I don't know whose fault it is. Anyone know? Have you ever been an air traffic controller, Eric? Do you know?
It sounds like the Delta pilot was not following taxiing directions and pulled up too soon and then completely cut off the tail of the CRJ.
Got it. Next, Taylor Swift wasn't the only megastar to throw her support behind Kamala Harris. Caitlin Clark sure seemed to be to show that she's got the VP's back in the race against Trump. Clark put a big old heart on Swift's now famous Instagram post suggesting she, too, will be casting her vote for the Democratic Party nominee. She's also registered over 300,000 people who got on her site, Taylor Swift, and went through. But you heard what Riley Gaines just said. Riley Gaines just said, really? She's for the Tim Walz's great stand on LGBTQ? When this guy's putting tampons in boys' bathrooms and you can go get you can go get transitioned from a different gender without telling your parents? That's good? Okay, Taylor Swift. Obviously, you're not a parent. Next, teen vaping, it's a 10-year low. The latest survey shows that teen vaping went from 6% last year down from 7.7%. More than 1.6 million students reported vaping. This year's decline was mainly driven by 500,000 fewer high school students who reported using it. I don't know how many people report using it, number one. I think it's pretty clear that it's not good for you. In the beginning, they were saying it was harmless. Now that you know, it's almost as irresponsible as smoking. Next, Tyreek Hill, the story that never stops. Demands police officer be fired after escalating detainment incident. But he says after careful and thorough review of the multiple body cams and concerned citizens videos that captured the events that transpired on Sunday between him and the department, we are demanding for the immediate termination. But to Hill's credit, he says he wishes he would have handled things differently. Hill's comments just joined the growing chorus of those calling for action. He says that he should have rolled the window down and kept it down. One of the reasons why he didn't, he said, was because everyone's going to recognize him and he was embarrassed. But he sounded pretty belligerent. But did the cop overreact? I'll let the police officers decide. I'm pretty sure you can't call for someone firing just because you're a famous athlete. Next, Reggie Bush scared off an intruder at his $5.5 million Los Angeles mansion. They smashed a window trying to break in. Keep in mind, crime is down. All right? When I tell you these crime stories, crime is down. So unless it... even if it happens to you, just know there's less crime. So the former Heisman Trophy winner, now got his Heisman back, reportedly stopped the crime before it truly took place. Bush was at home when the robbery started. The legend says that they started yelling after they broke the glass in his house. After local police arrived at the scene, broken glass was discovered right near the back of his home. No one was injured during the incident. So when they start getting the rich people's houses, that's usually when people start paying attention. Next, Jordan Chiles breaks down in tears over the Olympic medal controversy. She deserved the bronze, was too late to protest. They gave the bronze to the Romanian. It looks like she has to give it back. Listen to her.
The biggest thing that was taken from me was that it was the recognition of who I was. Not like my, not just my sport, but my person, like the person I am. To me, everything that has gone on is not about the medal. It's about, you know, the, my skin color.
Wow, skin color. Forbes Power 100 women had Chiles tearfully elaborating on the aftermath of the situation, which she was bumped from fifth place to third in the last month's four exercise final due to a Team USA inquiry, sparking a back and forth. She got the bronze, then someone noticed some technicality, so they had to give it up to the Romanian. Obviously, the thing to do is to give it to both of them. Are we out of bronze medal? Just can we make another one? But I don't think skin color has anything to do with it. Pete, did I miss something? What does skin color have to do with it? Do you know? Eric?
I didn't see anything about skin color, but I do know the Romanians did offer to also have her have a bronze medal, and the IOC declined.
Yeah, but that's the problem. I don't blame the Romanians. I actually, if it was me, I wouldn't want it. The minute you start taking it from me, I take the Cali. I know I came in third. Remember, Holyfield had a gold medal. They said he hit somebody after the bell. They take it away from him, wins the bronze medal match. He ends up becoming a four-time heavyweight champ and one of the most famous of his successful of his generation. Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you October 20th in Peekskill, New York. Get tickets, History, Liberty, and Laughs on stage, a show like no other.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.